Thank you. So my name is Randy Danielson. I'm a software design engineer and test on the Branch Cache team. And we'll be talking today about Branch Cache, which is a new feature in Windows 7 and R2. So we're quickly going to go over the background problem, some of the solution modes that are involved, deployment, do a quick demo, and then do some deep dives into some of the more specific areas. And at the end, we'll have some resources. So the problem background. So currently, there are branch offices all over the world that are connecting through very thin, expensive WAN links. And because these links are very thin, they're very highly utilized in the branches. And this, in turn, creates very poor application responsiveness. Sometimes these links have latencies in the order of 100, 200 milliseconds. And because of this, when someone goes and clicks on a Word document or any kind of content in the headquarters, that's going to come down really slowly over that WAN link. And that directly impacts productivity in the branch. And there's also this trend towards data centralization, where data is being removed from the branches and putting into headquarters to make it easier for IT to manage. But this directly impacts the branch as well and just compounds the problem. So our solution was Branch Cache. Our solution is local, which means that the data is in the branch itself and not necessarily in headquarters. We have two modes with this. We have a distributed mode where data is shared among peers in the branch without any infrastructure needed. Or we have a more centralized called a hosted cache mode, which is going to retrieve data from a central cache in the office. The solution is secured. So clients can only retrieve content locally if first authorized by the server. So security guarantees are still in place. And all data transfers in the branch are encrypted. And the solution is also end-to-end. It maintains protocol integrity. It benefits from all the protocol optimizations that might be happening and that might happen in future versions. And because of this, we're able to optimize SSL, IPsec, SMB signing, HTTP, and SMB. So what are some customers saying? So LukeOil has a couple branch offices around the world with just a few people, 5 to 10 users typically. And they found that when they deploy Branch Cache, in quote, "we are improving the efficiency of our branch offices and saving bandwidth by using Branch Cache in Windows Server 2008 R2 and Windows 7. And for them, in this particular situation, Branch Cache is the perfect solution. Sportun was able to save about $30,000 on their WAN utilization costs by postponing their expansion schedule when they incorporated Branch Cache into their offices. And Convergent saw a 43% savings in wide area network bandwidth savings. So to go over the various modes, the first one is distributed caching mode. So you have a main office on top and a branch office towards the bottom. And you have the client in the branch that's going to go access some data on the server. Now, when the data access occurs, this is going to use the PCC RTP protocol if using HTTP, or using SMB2 if using SMB2. Instead of sending the data back down to the client over the high latency WAN, using PCCRC, if using HTTP, a small identifier is going to come back down to the client. The client is going to do a lookup in the branch, see if the content exists already, using PCCRD. Doesn't find the content in the branch, goes back to the server, and the data comes down slowly to the client. Second client comes in a little later, wants to access the same data from the headquarters. Small identifier once again comes down. A lookup is done in the branch using PCCRD again. Using PCCRR, the content is found because the first client already downloaded the content or the data, and the data just is simply returned to the client.
So, can you differentiate between PCCRD?
PCC RTP is the HTTP extensions that Branch Cache is using to identify on the network.
So SMB2, you want to use a new...
So SMB2 has been extended to use branch cache in their protocol.
Okay. So we're going to have a new command, SMB2, new verb?
I think there is I'm not quite sure on that one, actually. Yeah, I think it's, yeah. Yes? It will use whatever is being used originally, I believe. So if it's using HTTP, it'll use HTTP. Oh, sorry. Can you repeat your question again? Okay, so the question is PCCRR will use either SMB2 or HTTP. And honestly, I don't know the answer to that question right now. Any other questions? So for the hosted cache mode, once again, you have two clients in the branch and headquarters. In addition, you also have a hosted cache in the branch. Once again, the first client is going to do a GET request to the main office. And a small identifier comes back down. And instead of looking up on the branch itself with discovery, the client is now going to search the hosted cache machine, looking for the data. Sends a data identifier across. Data is not found, so the client goes back to the server. The data comes down once again slowly. And this time, using PCHC protocol, the client is going to offer to the hosted cache the content that it just received. An offer request goes over. The hosted cache makes a request for the data, and the client pushes the data onto the hosted cache. The second client is going to request the same data, do a GET request to the main office with a small identifier coming down. Search the hosted cache again, where it will find the content this time, because it's already been cached, and then grab the data off of the hosted cache using PCCRR again.
Can you go back to the slide again?
Sure.
So when you do a GET, the first GET, why you don't do a search first?
The search was done first. Yeah, the search was done here off of this client first.
Okay.
And you couldn't find the content.
Okay.
So then he goes back to the server to request the data over the WAN link.
The first one?
Yeah, so I think the reason is to do a search, you need the IDs. IDs are
requested. Oh, so you don't have the ID yet?
Right. Yeah. So the difference between the hosted cache versus distributed caching model is that we recommend the distributed caching model for micro branches that necessarily don't have any infrastructure, because data can be cached among peers, you don't need to have any infrastructure in the branch. It's incredibly easy to deploy. You can just enable a client using SSH commands or through group policy, but cache availability does decrease because laptops can go offline since you don't have a central server to rely on. In the hosted cache, it's recommended for larger branches because it's not using a lookup, a broadcast. It can go across multiple subnets, whereas distributed caching is limited to a single subnet. The cache is stored centrally, so it can also just be another, if you already have an infrastructure box in the branch, it can just be another workload on that box. Cache availability is high because it is, you know, a central system in the branch, and it enables branch-wide caching because it can go across multiple subnets. So this is the overall framework. We built branch cache as a platform, and SMB2 and HTTP were instrumented to take advantage of branch cache. And because of this, applications that use SMB2 or HTTP just light up. The whole thing is transparent to these applications, so there doesn't have to be any additional work that has to be done. Sorry, yes?
Can I just ask you,
Yes. Yes. Oh, sorry. So the question is, does this work for HTTPS as well? And the answer is yes. And we just showed some, you know, Microsoft applications here like Office, Robocopy, Explorer for SMB2 and AFI, SharePoint, Office Bits, WMP, and IE for HTTP. So now that we know how the various modes work, let's talk about how we deploy branch cache in the branch and in headquarters. So for the distributed model, you simply need to have content servers in headquarters that are running R2. In the branch, you'll have clients that have to be running Windows 7 or R2. For the hosted cache model, you would have, once again, content server in headquarters running R2, and the clients in the branch running Windows 7. In addition, you would also, in the branch, have a hosted cache, which would be running R2 Enterprise. And all this does work on server core R2 as well. So deployment of the content server. For HTTP, you would simply install the branch cache feature from Server Manager. And for SMB, for file server, you would install the branch cache role service feature within the file server role using Server Manager. And that's it. I'd like to make one point that in addition for the SMB server, though, you also have the option to enable branch cache on no shares, all the shares, or just the shares that you're interested to enable it on. So deployment on the client. You'll first want to identify what your branch is. So this could be an Active Directory site, it could be an IP address range, or it could be a collection of specific client computers in the branch. Then you want to choose how to deploy. You can deploy through group policy, or you can run NetSH commands on all of the client machines in the branch, and you can also use PowerShell since it is remotable. And then you'll want to deploy to the clients. Once again, if you want to use group policy, use the built-in ADMX files, or you can simply run this simple NetSH command to put all the clients in distributed caching mode. The hosted cache is a little bit different, but very similar. You're going to want to first set up the hosted cache in the branch. So to do that, you're going to install the branch cache feature on an R2 Enterprise server. And then you're going to want to install a server author certificate for use with SSL. And this is used for the offer from the client to the hosted cache. Because the data came down from headquarters over the WAN to the client using its authentication, it is now, that ID is now privileged information. And so it's going to send that ID back to the hosted cache through SSL. And then once you do that, you run this NetSH command to provision it as a hosted cache server. You want to, once again, identify the branch. Choose how you're going to deploy. And then you're going to deploy to the clients. So you're going to use the built-in ADMX files if you're going to use group policy, or you're going to run this NetSH command on all the clients, giving it the location of the hosted cache. So in summary, use group policy to enable the clients. You're going to have content servers in the main office that are running R2 with branch cache. And optionally, if it meets your needs, you can install a hosted cache in your branch. There are also some additional configuration options which are available through the NetSH commands to disable, as we've seen previously, or enable distributed hosted cache mode. You can set the cache size on the clients. You can set the location of the hosted cache as seen previously. You can clear the cache, and you can set the SMB latency, which I believe default is 80 milliseconds. And yes? So the question is, how do you configure this? It's through NetSH commands. And it also works in domains and work groups, As long as you can make a TCP connection between machines, then branch cache should work.
What is the SMB latency?
The SMB latency is the latency that SMB will use before it utilizes branch cache. So if it's configured to a lower, so if it can grab a file at a lower latency, let's say you configure for 80 milliseconds and, and the latency on the link is like 30, then it won't use branch cache. So we also have a few monitoring tools. We have operation on audit event logs, perfmon counters for the client, the hosted cache, and the content server. And we also have NetSH commands for querying the infrastructure for potential problems, like if your cache size is too small, you have firewall issues, or there's certificate problems. And we also will be deploying an SCOM, formerly Mompack, which will roll up the event logs and the perfmon counters. So now for the demo. So we have a content server set up, which is not shown, that is has a network emulator on it, which is slowing down the link to 1 megabit per second, and has a latency of 100 milliseconds on the link, round trip. And we have two clients in this demo, and they're set up in distributed mode. So the first client is going to come into the office, and he wants to download this presentation. So he uses Robocopy to get the presentation. Since this is the first time, it's going to take some time to get this presentation down to the client. And the client is just going to wait and wait some more. Yes?
Can
I
take a packet trace?
I could, but I don't have the... You just want to see what's going over the... Yeah. Well, actually, I don't have the tools installed. So. Do a Tyler, do you know? You know how you get a packet trace on... Okay, we can do it offline. So the content finally came down on the first client. Now the second client is going to come into the office and wants to get the same presentation. So using Robocopy, he is doing all the activity that was shown in the previous slide, and got the content down a whole lot faster because he got it off the first client. So this directly impacts the productivity of the branch office worker. Any questions on the demo? Yes. Excuse me? And then saves it on the content server. Okay, so the question is, what happens if someone changes the content? So you're always going to go to the server first using branch cache. So if the first client gets the document, changes it, saves it back to the content server, the second client is going to probably have to pull down the data again because it's always going to grab the most updated version of that document or that content. Yeah, it means it could be slow if, and we're going to get to it a little later in the presentation. It could possibly be slower if the content has changed a lot. You might have to get the whole content again.
So, do you do parallelism? That means you contact more than
You can, in distributed caching mode, you can contact more than one peer to get data.
At the same time?
At the same time, yes. Any other questions on the demo? So let's go a little bit deeper. So now we're going to talk about how content identifiers work in branch cache. So you have the content, which is represented by this blue block. And we take that content, we chunk it up into segments. And did you have a question? So, and segments are a unit of discovery. We further take those segments and chunk them up into blocks. And blocks are a unit of download. Yes? What is the blocks is 64K, and segments are 32 megs.
32 megs?
Yes. And the reason we do this is so we don't want to, so since segments are a unit of discovery, we don't want to span the network with all kinds of traffic. But we also want to get data down as fast as possible, so that's why we have blocks and why they're a unit of download. So you can say to client one, I want, you know, blocks 1, 2, 3, and client two, I want blocks 4, 5, 6. As soon as blocks are returned, they go up to the application. And because of all this and the way that hashes are computed, you can get a 2,000 times data reduction across your WAN link. So why do you need a segment hash? So first it's part of the identifier that's coming down from the branch. So it's not, instead of sending the whole data down, it's just going to send this segment hash down to identify that piece of content. So let's look at how HTTP integrates into branch cache. So you have your branch cache, your branch office on the left and headquarters on the right. You have the application, which is going to be IE on the client and IIS on the server. On the client side, you're going to have the HTTP stack, which is WinINet. On the server side, you're going to have the HTTP stack, which is HTTP.sys. And then branch cache is underneath both of them. So IE wants to open a URL. It talks to WinINet and says, I want to open this URL. WinINet sends a message to HTTP.sys saying, I'm branch cache capable. I know this special new protocol. Please help me out. HTTP.sys goes up to IIS to get the data. At this time, this is where the normal authorization would occur. So IE is going, branch cache isn't even involved at this point. All the authorization is happening between IE, between these four components right here. If the user is authorized, the IIS is going to send back down the data to HTTP.sys, and because it's branch cache, it got a branch cache capable message earlier, it's going to send the data down to branch cache, which from the previous slide is going to chunk up the data into a hash list. Once the hashes are generated, the hash list goes back up to HTTP.sys, goes over the same connection that was originally used back to WinINet. The hash list goes, WinINet received the message, realizes this is, you know, a special response, sends the hash list back down to branch cache, and then branch cache does a lookup in the branch. And there's lookup. When content is found, the client is going to make connection to one or more peers in the branch, download the content, branch cache is going to send the data back up to WinINet, and back up to IE. It's completely trans. This whole thing is completely transparent to IE and IIS. And authorization is done before branch cache is even involved.
So the hash segment hash.
It's going to be the segment hash, the block hashes, all that. That was from the previous line. And we're going a little more detail about this later on. Yes.
Even if there is a partial read on your branch cache, like the second one going back.
Excuse me.
Some part of the data is available in the branch cache, but the whole data is not there.
So if the whole data is not available, then it will go to back to the content server to grab
the rest of the data, and in that case, it knows that it's not.
It'll get the data that it can from branch cache, correct? And then the rest of the data it will get from the content server. Yes.
So still within the boundary of the block.
Right? It's this in the boundary of the segment.
So let's say that we have partial data in the branch, and the rest they're gonna look up like 64K at a time to see that it's not there in the branch.
So blocks are distinct. So if a segment's not found in the branch, then it's just gonna go back to the server to retrieve it.
It's quite huge, right? I mean, if you have 16 MB available in your branch cache, it's pretty good to go back to the content server for full 32 MB, then what's the point in having blocks? It has to be block level, right?
Can you repeat the question again?
So you mentioned that if the whole segment is not found in your branch cache.
That's correct. Okay, so if the whole segment's not found in the branch cache, it's going to go back to the server.
For the whole segment, right?
Yes.
Then why do you have blocks?
So that we can get, so that clients can download blocks from clients faster.
But
you don't want to spam the network with all this traffic.
But let's say that the segment has been changed at the origin, just one byte, right? 32 meg of segment is going to have different hash.
So it's going to have a different hash, so it's going to look it up differently in the branch.
So it's going to be not found at the branch, even though there's a one byte change.
That's correct.
So you're going to download the whole 32 meg again from the origin just because of one byte change?
Yes. That is correct.
And absolutely. So I think the question here is, if an individual block changes, are we doing anything intelligent in recalculating the segment hash or anything like that? And the answer is no. Right? So even if a change does happen on the block level, that will affect the segment level higher up. Right? So it's in this version, this is the behavior that we offer.
Thank you, Todd. So let's take a look at how SMB integrates with branch cache. So in Vista, you had the CSE service, which talked to a CSE driver. And then you had the SMB client driver with a CSE cache. And you also had the SMB server driver on the server side. In Win 7, in R2, we introduced the SMB hash generation service on the server and the hash gen utility. And the pieces that are missing are branch cache and the actual application. So the application is going to do a read file to the CSE driver. The CSE driver is going to prefetch the file from the CSE service. And because it doesn't have hashes associated with it yet, it's going to request hashes to the SMB client driver. The SMB client driver requests hashes from the SMB server driver on the other side, accesses the hashes from system volume information, sends the hashes back over the same channel. The hash list goes up to the CSC service, goes up to branch cache. Branch cache will now do a lookup in the branch to see if the content is found, send the data back down to the CSC service. CSC service is going to send the data back down to the CSC driver, and now the data is going to be written in two places. It's going to be written to the CSC cache, which is also the and there's also a new feature in Win 7 called transparent caching. And the data is going to go back up to the application. Yes, sir. Yes, it is.
So we're basically using infrastructure for our offline files to provide the temporary location to cache the data locally. It doesn't have the semantics that offline files does, so if the content's not available when you're actually offline, but we use the same storage infrastructure to do that for the SMB data. And that's what that's what transparent caching is essentially. So if we're extending the offline files
okay, I'm sorry. I'll repeat it for the mic, I guess for recording purposes or transfer. So the question was if the CSC driver and CSC service is the same as the offline files service and infrastructure that's been present in Windows before in prior releases, and the answer is yes. What we've done is extend the use of the offline files cache to provide a way to basically locally accumulate in cache the SMB traffic for content that doesn't have the offline files semantic. So this content's not available when you're offline, but we use the same infrastructure for providing a local place to store the content while you're online, and so that we can retrieve it from branch cache. Just the way that the branch cache infrastructure works in user mode, and all the SMB data comes in from over in kernel mode through the SMB, that's sort of where the network file system layering is. We needed a place to accumulate the data that's retrieved from branch cache, and we're basically using the offline files caching infrastructure for that. And the feature that we've added to offline files to support that is called transparent caching. So.
This is SMB2. So the question was, what version of SMB? And it's SMB2.
Yeah, it's in fact actually, so it's the enhancement, the ability to request hashes is added to, it's SMB2, it's the extensions to SMB2 that have been added for Windows 7. That's the version of the protocol that supports the hash retrieval, so 2.1, yeah.
So is there
that interface is not publicly documented. That's not part of CSC is essentially an application component in the OS, so that's not publicly, those interfaces aren't publicly documented. The FS control that we use to retrieve the hashes is part of the public documentation. And conceptually you can just think the CSC driver sort of acts as a filter to on the remote file system stack to watch the SMB data.
So the CSC cache, for example, if a certain application requests the same data, then you're not going to retrieve from branch cache, but you want to retrieve from the CSC cache.
Correct. The question was if a second application requests the data that's in the transparent cache in CSC. Yeah, we will first find, if we find it in the CSC cache, we will retrieve it directly from there. And not go to try to retrieve the data from branch cache. We maintain the same semantics as SMB does with respect to when you can honor the cache copy or not with the oplocks and leasing support. So if we, according to the SMB protocol, are allowed to cache the data on the client, and our cache is up to, and the version we have in the cache is up to date with the content on the server, then we will retrieve that version from the. Correct. The locking for oplocks and leasing are in memory. Correct. We have, during this whole process, we have the client does still have a handle open on the server. So it does. The data that is cached for either through the transparent cache or through branch cache are on disk. But whether or not we will return that data, like that state of whether or not it is valid for us to return the content that we have in our cache is managed in memory. So it's if another client accesses, if you've got another conflicting request from a client that's updating the server copy, that will break our lease or opportunistic lock on that file for the first client, and we won't retrieve the content from the cache any longer.
So
back to the example that I just mentioned, if application 2 requests the same data, then you still go to the content server first, open the file to resolve the object contention. Is that correct?
Correct. So if a second application opens the file, we do still need to do the open to the server to maintain the ensure that we still have the proper oplock semantics. But we if that's granted, then we'll just grab we'll grab all the data from the transparent cache. We don't need to request hashes. We don't need to do any of that work. We just do the open to the open the handle on the server and validate that the content we have in the cache matches the server content, using file timestamps and file sizes, and then.
Even after the second open,
after the second open, so the question is: after the second open, do we need to get the hashes? If we determine that our content in the transparent cache is up to date, we do not need to get the hashes. We could determine on the second open that that the file's been updated, and so we need to retrieve new content from the server. In that case, we will go through the prefetch path that was previously walked through to try to retrieve the updated content from the branch cache. It's just for the data, not for the metadata. Correct.
So branch cache is a second level cache. So if that is going to, and HTTP has the same, and WinINet, I mean, has the same thing, that if data is in their local cache, they're going to get that data first before they use branch cache. And the data is, and branch cache does have a separate data file for its cache. So if hashes weren't on in system volume information already, the SMB server driver is going to send a request up to the SMB hash generation service to generate or update the hashes. And optionally, you can also use the hash gen utility to hash an entire directory. And once that is accomplished, then the hashes are saved back. So how is SSL optimized? So on the, you have the client on the left and the server on the right. And we're just going to walk through a very simple data flow. So IS is going to send data in the clear to HTTP. HTTP is going to send data in the clear to SSL, which is then going to encrypt the data. The data, SSL is going to send the encrypted data to the sockets layer, which is going to send it to IPsec, which could further encrypt it some more. Send that encrypted data over the wire. Send the encrypted data back up to the sockets layer. Back up to SSL, where now data is in the clear. And send the data up to IE in the clear. Now, branch cache operates at the HTTP level, so it sees data in the clear on the server side, and it sees data in the clear on the client side. So it's able to compute hashes or identifiers on the server, and it will be able to compute the same hashes on the client, so it is a completely end-to-end solution for SSL traffic. Any questions? So let's talk about security a bit. So you have the client on top, the server on the bottom. And this might get back to your previous question about hashes. So we're going to take one segment, which is computed of a bunch of blocks, or which is comprised of a bunch of blocks. We're going to hash each of those blocks and the block hashes, remembering that block hashes are a unit of download. Those block hashes are going to be taken to compute a segment hash, which is a unit of discovery. In addition, we're also going to have a server secret key that is going to be used on the server to compute a private segment key. Now, the reason that we have the server secret key is that if you didn't have the server secret key, the clients would be able to generate hashes of the content themselves. And since we always want to go to the server first to get authorized and get the content, we have the server secret key. Once the client has a private segment key, it is able to generate a segment discovery key and encryption key, which it then uses to validate the data. So let's go through a security flow view. So the client requests data from the server and indicates that it is branch cache capable. The server authorizes the client, and then it retrieves the metadata about the content, which is comprised of block hashes, segment hashes, the private segment key. And then that server is going to send all that metadata on the same channel as the original data back to the client. The client then computes a segment discovery key, which is then broadcast on the local network. The serving clients are going to receive that broadcast. They're going to decrypt the segment hash from the segment discovery key and respond with data availability to the client. The client is then going to request blocks from the serving client, which is going to be one or more. The serving client computes an encryption key for the segment private key. And the serving client encrypts each block with the encryption key. The client is going to receive the data, decrypt the data, and because we trust information coming from the server, but we don't necessarily trust data coming from the clients, we're going to validate the block data against the block hash. If that is valid, the data is returned to the application. So then there's a question of security of data at rest, or the content that is in the cache on the system. So for clients, it's important to point out that the cache only contains content requested by the client. It's not going to have data pushed onto it from another client. Its cache is only going to be filled with content that it is authorized for. The data in the cache is ACLed, so that it is only accessible if authorized first by the server. And if data leakage is a concern, because there's going to be lots of content data on the system, then we recommend using BitLocker, or you can use EFS just to encrypt the branch cache file itself. On the hosted cache, this is a little bit different, because the cache now is going to contain content requests about all clients in the branch. And once again, if security is a concern, if data leakage is a concern, you can use BitLocker or EFS to encrypt the cache as necessary. And using a netsh command, you can purge all data from the cache. So to summarize, and I'm just going to read this. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So does it require that all the participants of branch cache belong to the same domain?
So can you repeat the question?
So does it require all the participants of the branch cache belong to the same security domain?
So the question is, does all clients have to belong to the same domain?
Right.
It doesn't have to. No, as long as you can make a TCP connection between the clients, you should be okay.
So how can you authenticate the client to make sure that they authorize access?
So the question is, how can you ensure that the client is authorized to access the data? Well, you'd have to have some kind of a security on the content. And you could use you know, security groups or whatever to do that. But it's just a simple, it's just an authorization. So whatever the authorization mechanism is that's what's going to be used. Oh, sorry, Tyler has some more.
Sure. If I know Randy covered this, but I don't know if it was clear in the presentation earlier. So if you want to be able to get content from another peer or from the hosted cache, you must have those identifiers that you download from the server in the main office. Otherwise, you're just not going to be able to make sense of what you get from a peer. So that is the security mechanism that we have, and it's not tied to the main membership or anything like that. But again, the idea is if I want to be able to get data from a peer, I must have those identifiers from the server in the main office, and I'm going to be checked by that server when I go to access the content in the first place. Does that make the security model clear? Again, is I have to be able to get the identifiers from the main office server.
Right. How do you know the client is authorized to download the IDs?
So that's managed by the higher level protocol. And so if it's HTTP or SMB, those protocols are going to authenticate the client or check for the correct permission for that client before sending back the data the branch cache generates. So all yes, that's correct.
Well, it's not necessarily, need to own it belong to the same domain. That user needs to have access to the files. So like at the file system at the ACL level, they have to have access to the share and access to the content on that share. Just the same way general file system ACL security model works. They need to be able to open the handle for read data access. If they can do that, then we'll allow them to retrieve the hashes and then they can look up the data. So and you can have users across multiple domains to have access to the same file share and the file and content on that share.
So if we can go back to this slide, this is so right, you have IE and it's gonna, you know, get authorized by IIS first, and branch cache isn't even in the picture at this point. So whatever authorization mechanism is used, that's what branch cache is gonna use.
Correct. Yeah, so from a client's perspective, they're just authenticating with the content server. I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I didn't hear. Right, it uses a combination of... So the branch cache, the discovery and retrieval along branch cache has no additional authentication than the authentication that was used to retrieve the hashes from whoever the content server is. So you use IE and IIS's authentication mechanism for HTTP data. You use SMB's authentication mechanism for SMB data. And then the assumption is that if the client got the hashes, it was authorized to get the content, and so there's no additional layer of authentication in at the branch cache level.
So then, conceivably, you could snip out those GUIs from one client, a second client, send them inside the branch office, and pull up the content.
So the question was, so if you had someone who you sort of untrusted sniffing the branch network traffic, it could get the hash list and retrieve it. And the answer to that is actually no. And so that goes back to Randy's slide with the security. There, so what is transmitted from the content server to the
we'll keep it simple. So it's a little bit more complicated than just hashes. You can see up here. There's a key that's used for segment discovery, and then there's a separate key that's used for decryption of the data. So you'll be able to sniff the segment discovery key, because that's what we shout out to go and find other peers that might have the data. But that encryption key, that's never shouted on the network. And the idea would be you obtain everything that you need to put together that encryption key from the server, and that communication should be flowing over an end-to-end protected link. And so if I'm using HTTPS to access the content server, the encryption key is going to flow over that, can't be sniffed. The discovery key can be sniffed, but of course you won't have the encryption key, so you won't be able to make sense of the data sniff between peers. Is that clear? So every, let's see here, every bit of content is going to have different key associated with it. You'll see the encryption key is derived from, so you have the formula up here, although I think you're missing a couple of things. It's derived from some of the content that, the content that you're trying to retrieve as well. So there's a few pieces that are factored in, but there's going to be different keys for different chunks of content. Comfortable? Everything that we've got going over the wire, all the mechanisms are documented.
Yeah.
Everything that we've talked about here.
So to summarize, branch cache reduces WAN bandwidth consumed by end users for internet-based HTTP and SMB traffic and improves end-user experience. Branch cache accelerates delivery of encrypted and signed content, such as when using HTTPS, IPsec, SMB signing, and at the same time ensures authorization of users by the server at the central office. Branch cache doesn't require any additional equipment in the branch office and can be easily managed using existing system management technology such as group policy. And finally, branch cache has a vibrant and growing ecosystem, giving customers a choice to pick a solution that works best for their needs. And we have a couple resources. Our website is www.branchcache.com, which currently just redirects to the TechNet site below it. Our email is branch@microsoft.com, and we do have the protocol documentation online on the TechNet website, but the links were really long. That's it. Any other questions? Thank you.